Howdy do, everybody. It's time for another OneLiner.com podcast, and I, as always, am Craig Eastman in Glasgow, Scott Morris.
Don't want to go back in the box.
And in Falkirk, Drew Tavendale.
Just get in the box. Stop complaining.
I've not done my song yet.
Okay, let's crack on. You probably wouldn't expect a film called Lebanon to be a barrel of laughs, and I'm guessing that Lebanon isn't a barrel of laughs. It's set in 1982 during the first Lebanon War, and it revolves around a group of paratroopers in a tank who are find themselves stuck in a rather annoying situation. Drew, would you care to elaborate on that, being as you've only just finished watching it?
Yes, my thoughts on it are not entirely settled, given I have just finished watching the last few minutes. Fuck. No, it's gone.
Scott, do you have any thoughts other than fuck?
I see Drew's opinions on this are not so much in a state of flux as a state of non-existence.
It must have been a powerful piece to leave you with that thought, Drew.
Right. Lebanon focuses on an Israeli tank crew on the verge of heading into the Lebanon to do, well, what tank crews do.
What Israeli tank crews like, yeah.
Although in this case, not so much, as they seem to be the least effective tank crew in the history of tanking.
Tankage? Are they even in a tank?
They're in a tank. They've managed that much. Oh. The rest of it's a bit shady. Almost immediately, this film sets out its stall as a vehicle for displaying the horrors of war, with a focus on civilian collateral damage caused by indiscriminate bombing by the Air Force. But it's doing it in a really clumsy, heavy-handed way, and it's kind of revelling in clichés for the first half hour. I believe it's supposed to be building up some kind of shock and awe opening, but it just felt a bit clunky and front-loaded. And there's a downside to plunging straight into kind of action and horror at the start of a film, namely that you're not really given any time to, well, pretty much meet, let alone care, about the protagonists inside the tank. By the time they're given enough of a personality to start caring about them, they've already been party to or witness at least to a dozen or so atrocities, and that makes it kind of difficult to root for them. So the narrative is fairly minimal. Basically, the town and the platoon they're escorting roll into a hostile situation in a township that's better defended than they thought it would be, and they kind of have to hole up for a while there before breaking out. Even that narrative gets underplayed somewhat. The tank crew is so far down the chain of command that they don't really know why they're doing anything and the end goals of what they're doing either. So there's not really any kind of reflection on the reasons behind the war that they find themselves in. And there's not much interesting commentary on the characters themselves inside the tank. The enclosed nature of the vehicle means that it's going for a sort of Das Boot vibe, but it doesn't really solidify into anything interesting out of that. I mean, I suppose the kind of sweaty, cramped nature of the tank is captured pretty well. I can't really fault much of the acting or the direction for that matter. It's executed well enough, but I just don't think that it's executing on anything particularly worthwhile. I didn't find it particularly well written. I didn't find any new insight here. It's only just playing on the tired themes of man's inhumanity to man, and I pretty much had my fill of that by the time I'd left high school, let alone now. It's not so much that Lebanon's a bad film, it's well enough made. I just don't think it's really bringing anything new to a discussion. It doesn't bring anything new to the table. It's not interesting in the way that something like Hurt Locker was. This is just another war film showing the horrors of war, and I've seen enough of them by this point that Lebanon feels pretty much redundant. I didn't really get an awful lot of enjoyment out of this film. Okay, enjoyment's the wrong word. It's not the sort of film you enjoy, but I didn't feel that this was really saying anything to me that I hadn't already heard an awful lot of times before. As I say, it's not a bad film, but I don't think it's really adding much to the table either.
Yeah, in the great arc of cinema, at the point we're at, it's perhaps not delivering anything new.
Yeah.
Oh, we all know what war's like. We've all been there. We've all been in Nam. Drew, did it make you want to shoot someone in the face with a tank?
It did, and unfortunately that was one of the characters in the tank. I agree with more or less all of what Scott said. I mean, if it's quite a fight if it reproduced the claustrophobia, I would imagine you'd feel with four or five people inside this tank. Yeah, it's well enough directed from that point of view that you can buy the experiences they might be having. But as Scott said, there's absolutely no characterization for ages in a film. Mm. And so basically from the beginning you're presented with these really, really incompetent people who seem to struggle not necessarily with any sort of moral problem with firing their gun, more just they seem like really, really annoying and weedy and a bit crap, which is quite sure not what they were going for. I just found the characters kind of irritating. And it it doesn't have anything interesting to say at all. Yeah, we all know war's a bit rubbish. And strangely, it's been getting awards up the wazoo. And some reviewers I've read have even suggested that it's better than Das Boot and The Hurt Locker. And clearly those people are on crack.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I spend any more time talking about it. I largely agree with what Scott said. It's not really adding anything to any important discussion.
Man, that tank. Cop Out is Kevin Smith's first film as director where he has not also been responsible for the script. It's received mixed reviews on the other side of the pond, but let's not make our minds up until Britain's largest movie reviewing brains have had a chance to wax lyrical about it. It centres on a cop partnership between Bruce Willis's Jimmy Monroe and Tracy Morgan's Paul Hodges. Jimmy has all the intentions of paying for his daughter's wedding by selling a rare baseball card, apparently, which is stolen by a memorabilia-obsessed gangster, I'm reassured by... by the IMDb plot synopsis. Drew, how does it go down?
Not well. As we said with so many comedies in the past, really all you need to know is that it's supposed to be a comedy and it's not funny.
Critical error.
Yeah, I think it does suffer from Kevin Smith not having written it. I know we've criticised Kevin Smith in the past for writing dialogue that might look fine on the page, but not something that somebody could actually say. But that's often tempered by the fact that it's still genuinely funny, and in this case the dialogue is terrible. The best dialogue in the film appears at an opening scene where the two cops are interrogating a suspect, and the only reason that dialogue's good is because it's just well-known quotes from lots of other cop films, and after that everything goes massively downhill because the writers are nowhere near as good as all the films that they stole from in the first scene. Bruce Willis is more or less just using,
heroin?
No, I did read a quote in Empire's review of it that for once I had to fully agree with. It was spot on, so I think I have to give them credit here. Is it Willis limits his performance to various modulations of his smirk, which is very, very accurate, largely. Everybody involved has done so much better before. It's full of annoying characters. Tracy Morgan's adult toddler character just wandering about being a bit pathetic and not funny. And the only time it gets funny at all is when Sean William Scott turns up in it and like gets dragged behind a police car. Yeah, I don't expect much for them. It's a comedy that's not funny. You don't really need to know an awful lot more than that.
Is Drew being harsh there, Scott?
I think, if anything, Drew may be being generous to it.
What's Kevin Smith done?
It's just not very funny. As Drew's saying, at least with a Kevin Smith film, you might not be getting realistic dialogue, but at least you're getting witty dialogue. And there's no chemistry at all between the two leads. The only time it even feels remotely like the lead characters are on the same page is when Sean William Scott's sort of acting as some sort of a glue. I think he's the only thing that's even remotely salvageable in this film. If you made the film like those three characters driving around in a car for 90 minutes, it would have been a far better film. But at the same time, I'm not entirely convinced that it's still worth watching. It's positioned as a homage to buddy cop movies like Lethal Weapon and all that from the 80s, but if they're aiming for a homage to Lethal Weapon, I think they've actually wound up with a homage to Bad Boys 2. It's just...
curiously though, Bad Boys 2 probably better than this, which is impressive.
Yeah, it's just not very good. Perhaps what annoys me more is Kevin Smith's had this sort of reaction before when Jersey Girl came out some years back and was hated by everyone just purely because it was on the wrong end of that Bennifer horribleness and the fallout of that. I felt that Jersey Girl did get a bad rap. It's not a dreadful movie. It's not a brilliant movie, but it's not the worst thing you've ever heard. This was the time when Smith was being accused of being a sellout and all sorts of horrible things. I have the horrible feeling at this point he may actually be selling out. I mean, this is easily Kevin Smith's worst movie, you know, which you can prove with science. Yeah, it's also the one that's taken the most money, which is, I guess, disappointing if you're not rewarding the actual funny stuff. And
mind-blowing would be another word.
Yeah. Yeah, but as I say, it's not funny. I think the only interesting thing for me about this film is that at one point Jason Mewes was going to be in it, as you might expect from a Kevin Smith film, but he couldn't make it due to scheduling conflicts. Which leads to the question, Jason Mewes has scheduling conflicts? Jason Mewes has a schedule?
He was lighting a bong that day.
Yeah, his schedule involved meet his dealer. It's weird too. Apparently, it's not something I picked up on really, because I was very, very fond of the film, but this seems to be something of a rebound for Kevin Smith, because Zack and Mary Make a Porno got such a bad rap, which is something I was entirely unaware of. It just seems to have gone, decided to become a director for hire and just take the coin instead. And it's a bad, bad move, because clearly, yeah, he can write bloody funny stuff. And if he'd had any involvement in the writing of this, it might not have been the utter turd that it was.
Apparently, the reason he's given for having made this is that it's the type of film that his late dad would have enjoyed. Now, draw your own conclusions from that as to Kevin Smith's late dad's choice of films. Rocking on then. Fichu Soutoni! That is flawless pronunciation. I can guarantee you. Spot on. But for those of you who don't speak flawless Japanese, it translates loosely to fish story. I won't go into the intricacies of the translation. Scott reassures me that the plot synopsis on IMDb is not entirely accurate, but I'm going to read it to you anyway, purely because it's probably better than the film itself. A rock band writes a song called Fish Story, based on a sentence from a badly translated novel by a quack translator. The song exceeds the boundaries of... space and time, and ties people and their stories together. 37 years go by, and the song strikes a comet and saves Earth from total destruction. Scott, how accurate is this?
I would categorise that as not entirely accurate.
It's some mental person who had never seen the film.
I mean, I've got to be honest, I sort of noticed that it had been released somewhere, read the IMDb synopsis and thought, right, we've got to cover it because of that. It turns out that's not really even close to the case. At some point in the 70s, just before the Sex Pistols arrive on the scene in Japan, a proto-punk band are struggling to find an audience for their punk music. But if they find a manager who believes in their work, and but they're so far ahead of their time that their music doesn't catch on, they only record one album, I think called Fish Story. They're canned from the label. Over the course of time between the 70s and 2012, where this comet's about to strike the Earth, a few people find bootleg copies and so on of this album and enjoy their music, and at points have small stories that combine in a very, very loosely connected way. Some characters then going on to perform various actions that kind of sort of tie up in the end, but I mean, the strands between the kind of three or four main sections in three or four different times. You've got someone in the 80s where there's a shy guy. He's downtrodden and he's trying to stand up to his bullying friend. There's a section set in 2009 where there's a ferry about to be hijacked and it's saved by a kung fu chef. And of course, you've got in 2012, the comet's about to annihilate the Earth, and there's these two guys in a record shop just listening to their favourite albums, one of which happens to be Fish Story. And there's a sort of non-linear narrative sort of bouncing back and forward, just trying to connect all these together and just basically graft on some illusion of depth to a film that doesn't really have an awful lot of it. The strands are so tenuous that it makes Babel look well put together. There's no real through line to much of it. So narrative is not really its strong point. And that said, I'm not exactly sure what the strong point of it would be. The acting's decent enough, but it's hardly earth-shattering, and the dialogue doesn't really shine, although there's a few interesting sections. The section with the band creating their music and dealing with their eventual rejection and breakup is the strongest, and it's thankfully the most frequently featured. The other sections feel often like they've been stitched in from a completely different film, completely different tone and, in most cases, quality of performance. The only real commonality between a lot of them is the omnipresent title song, which I hope that you like, because you'll hear it an awful lot. thankfully I do, so it wasn't quite as annoying, but I can imagine that being very, very irritating, very, very quickly. Truthfully, I've not got any justification for calling this anything other than somewhat worse than mediocre. That said, I found it completely inoffensive while watching it, and it falls just the right side of whimsical to be charming rather than annoying. I can't really back this up with paperwork, but despite it not having any obvious strengths and being quite badly paced and about half an hour too long, I still kind of liked the film. I struggle to explain why, but certainly I recognise that I'm probably a fringe case in this. I can't recommend that anyone make extraordinary efforts to track it down. There's nothing particularly remarkable about it, even where it readily available to encourage you to go and see it. I suppose I've mentioned before in some of this that there's something about Asian cinema. I guess it was overexposed as a kid, and it just goes directly to my gurgling pleasure centres rather than go with any kind of critical faculties. It's in no way a good film. It's pretty run-of-the-mill stuff, but you know, at least it's in a different language.
Whimsical comet bashing fun, Drew, or tenuous pap?
You probably could argue that it's probably a bit of both, but I actually quite enjoyed it, even though I was disappointed, but it wasn't quite as batshit mental as the summary on IMDb would suggest. Beable is actually the film that came to my mind thinking about this, and I would actually say that the links between the characters because of this song are probably stronger than are in Babel, which was astonishingly tenuous. And the upside of this is that, unlike Babel, it's also in any way enjoyable at all. There are a couple of really dodgy performances in it, particularly the girl on the ferry is an appalling actress. But for the rest of it, the acting is passable. It's entertaining. It's, as Scott says, overlong. Yeah, it's okay. It's oddly entertaining. It probably ought not to be. But I really can't see why, given it's not a particularly easy film to get hold of, why anybody would bother.
I'm glad I'm not alone in this, to be honest, because I remember sitting there thinking, I'm quite enjoying this, but earlier today when I sat down to actually write up some notes about it, it's like, what did I like about this film and why did I like it? And I can't back any of it up with
nor could I at all, but I actually did enjoy it when I was watching it last night. I'm thinking, yes, I actually quite like this and I quite like that song. And it's weird, quite an odd film too. It's got some sort of movie references, when the Tobin is trying to comment, the most notable one being Bruce Willis's Armageddon. But then later on, there are also distinct references to Karate Kid, including visual references of him doing sort of the whole wax on, wax off thing, which actually had me stopping the film for a while, just like, can't imagine that Karate Kid would even have played in Japan, let alone be fondly remembered to be brought back in some obscure film later. It's an odd wee beastie. Because really, there's nothing that you could say, well, this is good, this is entertaining, yet I found it quite good and quite entertaining. It's an odd one, but
I've changed my opinion. This film is a must-see, and then maybe after you've seen it, you can tell me why I liked it.
Is it your film of the week?
Film of the year.
Yay!
Actually, in seriousness, it definitely is.
Lebanon it's easily is certainly, film of the week.
Lebanon's definitely a better made film. But this is a far more interesting and enjoyable film.
Yeah, but Lebanon doesn't have anything interesting to say. Well, neither does this, but this doesn't pretend to.
True.
Which is the important difference.
Everybody in this film, I confidently predict, has a better English accent than Russell Crowe. On that note, we shall leave you good people in peace. thanks for... What the fuck was so funny about that?
I don't know.
Right, yeah, we're going to leave you in peace now. Drew's going to take his meds.
That's what I've forgotten, isn't it? Right.
He's going to take his meds over there in Falkirk, so he's saying ta-ta now.
Bye-bye.
Scott's probably not going to take any meds, though he's probably going to take something. I don't know. And he's in Glasgow.
This is a story of my solitude, if my solitude were a fish.
You can't argue with that.
A whale would get out of there, so ferocious.
And I'm going away to be the only normal person here tonight. Oh, yeah, if you've got any shit you want to send us, podcast@theoneliner.com. Just anything would be nice.
Also, why not check out our movie commentary podcast, available in the iTunes store?
Yes. I'm stiff as a board. Oh, God, it's all gone Pete Tong. bye, everyone. Bye. Fuck's sake.
Clank, clank. I'm a tank.
Clank, clank. I'm a tank. In a rank with more tanks. That was Scott Morris's The Tank.